Aquatic invasive species have been a problem for Wisconsin waterways for a long time. Today we'll be talking about a revision to the state's management plan. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm filling in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our guest today is Jeannie Shear. She is an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist for UW Extension and an aquatic invasive species monitoring specialist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Jeannie is a contributor to the management plan revision, and we're going to talk to her about the proposed changes and why they need to be made. The DNR is also looking for your input and will tell you how you can weigh in. And if you want to tell us what you think right now, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, Jeannie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, and for those who have read the program note from yesterday, we were going to have Tim Campbell, who's been with us a few times, but he has a pretty good excuse for not being here, and he became a dad yesterday.
Sure did.
Congratulations to Tim and Jen, and was it a boy or a girl, Jeannie?
A boy.
A boy.
Finn. Do you know? Finn with two N's.
Finn with two N's. Okay, excellent. Well, congratulations. And that, like I said, I'll forgive him for not being here, and I get to talk to you, so that's great. Now, Jeannie, Tim was the lead writer on this new revision of the Aquatic Invasive Species Management Plan. Quite a mouthful. But you were also a big contributor. Now, why was this revision even needed?
Well, the original plan was created back in 2003, and of course, we've had so many things that we've learned. We've had new species come in. Back then, we didn't have Amazon. They were selling books and just starting to sell other things online. Now you can get a whole range of plants and animals for your aquariums, fish, things like that that are we consider organisms in trade, that you couldn't get them so easily back then. So that's a whole new pathway of invasive species into the state. And then we have changes in our recreation, wake boats, which are the ones that throw the big waves and actually hold ballast water.
Sure.
Those were just coming on the scene back then, too, and we were still learning how to deal with recreational boaters and how to educate them on what they might accidentally be moving from one lake to another or river.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what organizations are actually involved in this revision?
Well, UW Extension has been involved through Tim and others, the County Aquatic Invasive Species staff. So many counties have an Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator. Nonprofit groups such as Wisconsin Lakes and the River Alliance of Wisconsin, and then multiple sections of the DNR staff, including the Lakes and Rivers section, which I'm a part of, fisheries, and law enforcement.
Oh, law enforcement, too. Okay, well, so that's a lot of people coming mm-hmm. together to revise. I'm going to imagine this is a pretty big document to begin with, is it?
It's a daunting task.
I would imagine. So was there things in the original plan that you kept that were actually working well for you?
Gosh, I haven't actually looked at for so many years, but there are many things that we've been doing ongoing since that original plan, like our Clean Boats, Clean Waters program that we've had started in the mid-2000s, I believe, where we go out and we have boat inspectors, educators, I kind of think of them in one light, that are looking at boats and fishermen's gear and the water they may have and actually educating them on how to help slow and stop the spread of invasive species by the steps that they do.
Mm-hmm.
That's been an important one. We've had funding for a number of years to help organizations from lake associations to RC&Ds and county actually take steps to educate their constituents and do management activities for controlling aquatic invasives. That's all been part of the ongoing
mm-hmm.
efforts.
And so that's something that you want to still continue to do, mm-hmm. obviously.
And then, of course, we also have all of the DNR staff that has been made possible through through our planning and through the funding that we're able to leverage because of this plan. You know, having this plan helps us bring in federal funds like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funds, which have been very, very important in keeping this going.
Mm-hmm. And I believe when I was kind of reading an overview of it, it said something about it does kind of zero in on specific invasive species.
Yes.
And then pathways mm-hmm. are also actually a good thing. So why don't you explain a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, I did know that. It just threw me the way.
Just need to jog your memory.
Yeah,
just
the question. I was thinking in terms of something else. Yeah, so we really were focused more on the species. You know, Eurasian water milfoil came in, I believe, in the early 60s. So that was very high on the table of things to figure out what to do about. We were looking at the species and not so much at the pathways of how those things were getting in. Obviously, we'd figured out the part about recreation and have worked on that over time, but there's many other pathways, and that's what this is built around in our new management plan. So we're focused on things like transportation utility corridors, the actions being taken by state and federal agencies, such as what's going on those properties. Maritime commerce, one of the first things people often think of if they know about aquatic invasives is ballast water. Very big efforts have been made over the years in that regard and still need to be worked through. Canals, dams, and diversions are a pathway. If you have a dam breaking something up, then certain things aren't going to get through. What happens if you're changing those systems? Recreational activities and service providers. So you've got your boaters, your fishermen, all of that. But there's also those folks that are marinas, people who are moving piers and docks, those type of providers. And we have the non-recreational fishing and aquaculture, which would be the bait shops. The aquaculture, of course, we've got all these farms, fish farms and things now.
That's a lot of changes. I guess I hadn't really even thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest today is Jeannie Shear. She is an aquatic invasive species specialist. We're talking about the new aquatic invasive species management plan that the state is working on. If you've got a question about it, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Jeannie, we're talking about the pathways of things coming in. What are some of the new aquatic invaders that we've seen in just the last couple of years, maybe 5 or 10 years, actually?
Well, one of the big ones I worked on was the New Zealand mud snails, where we had our first discovery here in Dane County over in Black Earth Creek in the Cross Plains area. And then a couple of years later, we were finding them in tributaries to the Sugar River. So that one is still high on our radar. And then starry stonewort is another that we've just started talking about in the last couple of years. It looks like a plant, but it's actually what we refer to as a macro algae, so very large single-celled organism.
Ooh, scary.
And but it kind of pillows the bottom and then it keeps going and it'll start covering up the native vegetation and can top out in the water. So it's a big concern for recreation, for navigation, issues like that.
I would imagine. Well, we do have a phone call, and we do have Bob in Land O'Lakes who wants to contribute to the conversation. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, thanks.
I'm a forester, natural resource person up in the North Woods, and just frustrated with the expansion every year to new lakes with Eurasian milfoil and the other invasive aquatic invasives. And we proposed several years ago that the DNR look at how they license boats, because the big culprit in this are fishermen and recreational boaters moving from lake to lake. And these are contaminated lakes and then going into clean lakes that don't have some of these most important aquatic invasives. And what we had proposed was that the DNR begin to license boats for operating on clean water versus infected water. And, you know, if you have a, it essentially would require guides and fishermen to have two boats if they wanted to operate on both types of waters. But that's the only way you're going to control this, is you just keep boats off, or boats that have been operating on infected waters. You license them with letters on the side of their boat with big fluorescent orange numbers, so that if you're on a clean lake and you see one of these boats on your lakes, you can report them, because there's no enforcement. There's no monitoring at any boat landings. We have property on Big Lake in Vilas, west of Boulder, and, you know, the Property Owners Association and the Discovery Center have done, you know, a lot of time, but it's only about 10% of the time that boats are being inspected or people are at the boat landings to.
Okay, well, I think we understand what Bob was trying to get across. What do you think about that, Jeannie?
Well, I understand his frustration. And Vilas, in particular, it has such a huge number of lakes. There is a very strong program for clean boats, clean waters up there with the boat inspectors and educators, but obviously they're not going to make it to every single lake. So the Aquatic Invasive Species statewide partnership engages on a regular basis our county partners. So we have Kathy Higley up in Vilas County. I hope that's her county, since I just gave her name. And she is super. Then we have other folks. I mentioned RC&Ds earlier, so Golden Sands in the central part of the state, Southwest Badger in the southwest corner. We have other counties that are active, and we come together on a regular basis. Twice a year we meet, and then of course we're constantly in contact through email and phone calls too. And so we bring the state people and the and those partners together, and we talk about things like this on a regular basis. We toss around ideas. We share ideas from other states have. Like, there are some states where you actually have a tag system. So if your boat is only going to go in and out of one lake, and or your boat has, they have a, that particular area has a decontamination station and it's been checked, the boat is tagged in some way. So we toss those ideas around and are always considering them and working towards those types of things. Certain things, like this type of thing, would be probably up to the legislators, possibly up to law enforcement. It's not in my wheelhouse, but those frustrations are definitely
considered. Oh, sure. There's a lot out there, and it's complicated. As mm-hmm. is everything. But, you know, if so, you know, Bob had this idea, would it make more sense for him to go to his legislator then? Or would it make more sense to go to the DNR? Or
maybe start with the county.
Okay.
Because I'm not a law expert any means. Maybe they would have some ideas in terms of local ordinances or something like that. Ordinances, of course, can always be topped by what the state will allow.
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
I would start there, a conversation. And then, of course, getting involved in the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program. Any lake association can do that. And actually, we provide $4,000 to put in 200 hours at your launch to where you can hire someone to do that for the summer if you don't have volunteers to do it.
Sure, sure. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about non-native species in our waterways with Jeannie Shear. She's an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist for UW Extension and an aquatic invasive species monitoring specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. Do you have questions about the efforts to address aquatic invasives? We'd like to hear from you. So give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. We do have open lines. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we are talking about aquatic invasive species. And Jeannie, let's get back to this plan a little bit. How can people see a copy of it themselves? How can they read through it?
It's very simple. You can either Google or go to the DNR webpage and search public input opportunities, and then if you were Googling, it would be DNR, Public Input Opportunities, and then click on the proposed guidance. There's going to be four buttons you'll see on the page. You're going to click on that proposed guidance button, and then you'll find it on a table when you scroll down the page in the row that starts with lakes and rivers. There'll be a link to the actual plan, and then it also has a link to the email address where we're collecting all the public comments, which is dnraisplan@wisconsin.gov.
And I would imagine if you just Google AIS, DNR AIS plan, AIS plan, that would come up. I would assume
it could. It might take you to maybe the older one, but
okay.
since people are already clicking on this, there's a good chance it would come up first.
Good, and I will try to put that on a program now on wpr.org/Larry. So if you want to go there in a couple of hours, you can. Hopefully, we'll have a link there also. I was told that you want people to give their opinions, that you want feedback. So there's a way to do that also.
Yes. So you're going to use that email address to give your comments and feelings about the plan. And we're looking for positive comments. We're looking for, they can certainly be negative comments.
Of course.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Please offer your ideas for what you think would
constructive criticism,
it.
Right?
Yes, constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. Somebody was talking about another public input opportunity. I don't even remember what it was. But they emphasized that they had X number of comments that were more or less the constructive, general, negative, you know, that. And they only had 300-some positive comments. So, you know, if you got something good to say, make sure you say those, too, because that helps move things forward.
That's a tendency for people. We complain, but we don't praise. So this is open until August 31st, I believe.
Yes.
And then what happens to this plan at that point?
Well, then it'll be moving on through the next steps of the process. And I'm not fully... It's not something I can rattle off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Sure. But they do have until the 31st, and there's probably some information out there on the website.
Right.
We did have Matt in Wausau send us an email, which is not about this particular plan, and it's actually not a I don't know if it's considered an aquatic invasive or not. Okay, it is. Okay. He said that he was part of the DNR Purple Loosestrife abatement plan in the early 90s, and he's disappointed as he drives around to see it everywhere. Not to be overly pessimistic, he says, but are there any success stories where an invasive has actually been stopped? In his experience, we are able to slow the spread at best.
And often that's absolutely the case. The purple loosestrife in particular, I do know quite a bit about that. I work closely with Brock Woods, who's been running that program since the mid-90s. And so the beetle control program that they put in place way back then, there's two, maybe it's three different specific types of beetles that they only eat purple loosestrife. And this was very thoroughly researched. We were fortunate that it wasn't something that got in the landscape and turned out to be another invasive. These will only eat purple loosestrife. And so people can still actually work with Brock to dig up some plants and put them under a net in their own yard with a swimming pool with some water and get beetles and put them on there. And once those beetles start laying eggs and having babies, they go. The whole plant goes back into the wetland to start attacking the other plants because they start eating them and it stresses the plants.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually, you know, efforts to do this type of biocontrol of many species. And what happens in this particular case is you don't ever knock it all the way back. You reduce its vigor, its energy. The plants don't take over like they had been. Brock told me in an area near us in Jefferson County when he started all of this, he had to stand on a step ladder or a 6-foot ladder to get high enough above the purple loosestrife to get a good picture of the wetland it had invaded. Now, most of the time, the plants are much smaller.
Well, I live in Jefferson County, and I definitely can tell a difference, even in the last 10 years, about the amount. There's still some there, but is nothing like it used to be.
Right. And the nice thing about, I just checked a site near Waterloo the other day where I was working with some Boy Scouts, or Cub Scouts, that did the beetle control, and it looks like they need more beetles.
Okay.
But I noticed the bees and the birds, they were loving it.
Yeah, so they like the purple loosestrife. So,
they
yeah.
do, mm-hmm. and so if we don't knock it back all the way, we're helping our pollinators that have lost so many other things.
Sure.
So in many cases, you know, the science is constantly working to keep up with these things. And we do have some things coming on. We've been looking at Zequinox for control of zebra mussels. That's still in the works. Minnesota's been doing a lot of work on that. And one of the great things, you know, our partnership expands beyond Wisconsin when it comes to working on invasive species. So we keep a track and work with them and discuss that with them.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Tom waiting in Nina. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Well, the concern I have is the round baby that's in Little Lake Beautimore. The only barrier that I'm aware of to keep it out of the Fox and Wolf River system is the lock and dam in Menasha. And I guess I'd like to have some discussion about what is the plan to prevent this invasive from migrating up into the Wolf River system, where it's going to compete with the local freshwater sculpin populations and then further upstream, you know, that'll impact the trout populations we have in the state.
Yeah, I'm aware of the round goby, the work that we're doing. I can't speak real well to it. Michelle Nault has been doing extensive work on that. Michelle has been one of our Great Lakes program specialists for AIS monitoring and control and management. And she's actually going to be moving to the program here in Madison in Lakes and Rivers section. She's going to be our new lakes ecologist starting in mid-September. She brings a lot of expertise to it, so I would refer anyone to her.
And what was the name again?
Michelle Nault, N-A-U-L-T.
N-A-U-L-T,
yeah,
okay.
She's on leave right now, but once she gets back, I'm sure she would welcome questions about that.
And for those who want to get more information, which website would be the best place for them to go?
If you go to the DNR webpage and just search round goby, there'll be a lot of information there.
Okay.
I imagine there's been a lot of recent articles out there, too. Try searching round goby and Michelle Nault, and you may find articles where she has spoken specifically to the issue.
Great. Thank you, Tom, for that question. Let's go next to Mike in Stoddard. Hi, Mike.
How are you doing?
Well, what's your question?
I just have a comment.
Okay.
We have a boat landing in our town, and it's managed by the village. And we have a problem with weeds. They had a drawdown years back. And they want you to get all the weeds off the trailer, which is totally impossible to do sometimes. And we wanted to put in a pressure wash station and just pump the water out of the river, fairly short hose, so the water would run right back in the river. And they said we could not do that just because of that. You couldn't let the river water run back into the river. If you want to stop these plants from traveling, you have to leave them there. And they just shot that down. I was wondering why.
Are you familiar with that, Jeannie?
I'm not familiar with the specific situation. Decontamination units and disinfection stations are a big topic among anyone working in this field. And there are a lot of local boots on the ground folks getting things going. I think the problem, the river water, without knowing exactly, it may have been that they were concerned, what if something gets sprayed into a location, you actually end up moving something by accident just because of what's in the water, or they're worried about contaminating the river, but because it came from there. The weeds on the boat came from there.
Yeah.
So
doesn't sound sensible, but I'm sure.
Yeah, it's hard for me to speak to that specifically, but I can tell you about what's going on with some other areas. So last year, Big McKenzie up in, I forget the county, I want to say Burnett, but I think I'm wrong on that. But they had one of the first infestations of zebra mussels up there. And they actually put together what they call a disinfection station. Decontamination is getting things off. Disinfection is where you actually have the opportunity to kill something. So they have 2% bleach solutions and sprayers that people are, they can go spray their boats. You do it away from the water because we don't want anything backwashing into the lake or the river. They have tools on site for people to pull the weeds off as best they can, and guidance on their sign for how to do that. And so that county actually did enact, and I don't want to say this wrong, I don't want to say the wrong county, but there are two counties up in that area that recently enacted ordinances. I believe it's Douglas and Burnett that if there's a decontamination station close by, disinfection, you need to go use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then many other stations, we have a sign that just you can get it through us at Extension and DNR. We don't provide the sign for free, but we'll provide the template for the sign.
And they have it printed.
Tell you how to get them printed. And hang tools like a broom handle with a bicycle hook is what the one looks like. Deck brushes and grabbers so that people can get those things under the boat. They are so hard.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, quick thing, duckweed and watermill, the two teensy, tiniest little plants we have, that at this time of year cake your boats, your kayaks. Those actually do not need to be fully removed by, according to NR 40.
Oh, well, that's good to know. You know, you were talking earlier about some of the things you do that for outreach events, like the Landing Blitz over the 4th mm-hmm. of July weekend. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those and, you know, just briefly, what are you hoping to accomplish in those events?
So we have two summer campaigns. The Landing Blitz we held this year from the Friday before 4th of July until 4th of July. It was a long one with the 4th of July falling
yes,
on a
Wednesday.
And that one, we're getting our message out through volunteers and the other people working on the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program to remind people that they play a huge role in stopping plants moving from one, or plants and animals from moving from one water body to another. That one, we give them a towel. It has a Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers logo, which is a national logo. We take advantage of national branding, so if somebody go to another state, they would recognize it. And then guide them through the steps if they don't already know. I've done lots of boat inspections myself, and I love it. One of my favorite things, this is my favorite thing I ever saw at a boat launch. I was at Rock Lake in Jefferson County. This family got out. It was your classic family, mom, dad, a boy, and a girl. Everyone on that boat had a job to do. Dad's job looked like it was taking care of the motor, making things sure hitches were right and chains were hooked. Mom was walking around, making sure the gear was stowed. The kids were doing the AIS work.
Wow.
So one of them was pulling off weeds and reaching under where little short people can reach easier. The son was doing the same. And I think that was the one where I heard him remind dad to remove the boat plug so the boat could drain.
Excellent. Well, kids are usually really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And just so you know, AIS is Aquatic Invasive Species,
yes.
which is long, and it's great when you're in print, but when you're on the radio, sometimes you
yes.
need to say Aquatic Invasive Species.
So I thought of that as those letters came out of my mouth.
You've got another one coming up, right, in September?
Yes, the Waterfowl Hunter Outreach. We've done this now. This will be the third year. And this is using our same general steps for reaching out to boaters during the summer, only it's focused on hunting the duck hunters in particular that are going out at accesses around the state. The opener is September 29th and 30th. And we're looking for volunteers to work with experienced staff to go out and be at the launches when the hunters go out. Well, actually, hunters go out around 1 a.m. or crazy times like that.
I was wondering about
that. Stake their places out. You're more often talking to them as they come in and guiding them through. For hunters, they have got a full plate when it comes to removing the risk. decoys get filled with water.
Oh, sure.
Many of them have dogs wearing vests. The vests get stuff in, under, and on. Mud is a huge problem. Some species, like starry stonewort that I mentioned earlier, has a little star-shaped bulbul. A bulbul is just a little bitty bulb, basically. Think of it like that. Very easy to hide in mud and get stuck on things like blinds. Then the starry stonewort itself can also get wrapped around boat props and tangled up into all of that type of gear. So we go out and we talk to them. We for all Clean Bowls, Clean Waters, we give a survey where we ask them if they've had their boat out in the last 5 days. That's kind of our window of highest risk that we're concerned about. Ask them where they've been. Guide them through the steps. Make sure they already know. If they don't, we show them. And as they go through the survey, we've got boxes to check, and then we enter that data into our SWIMS database. And now we've actually been able to use that to create this cool tool called the Where Boaters Have Been. And we do it through our Lakes and AIS viewer, which is it's a map, basically a live map. And so we go through those steps. Well, the survey in the summer is geared very specifically the conversational talking points to fishermen and recreational boaters. So we've redone the one for the hunters to focus on what they need to focus on.
Right.
Don't use non-native phragmites as blinds if you're in a prohibited county.
Oh, my goodness.
So things like that. It gets complicated, so we gave them their own version of the form. And so I'm looking for volunteers, and I provided Jill the link to a training I'm going to do next week. We're going to have a webinar at about, I think it's 10 in the morning, Wednesday morning, the 29th, and again at 6:30 in the evening, so we can get people when they're most available.
Okay, and for those that maybe don't have the internet, where?
They can give me a call at my office, 608-266-0061.
0061, okay, that sounds good. We did have a question from Robert in Amherst who called in, but he could not stay with us. He says that he's tried to use the information on the DNR website and in other places online to identify the difference between the Eurasian water milfoil from the native milfoil, and there isn't enough available information. Are there any efforts to improve and or add additional information on invasives online?
We are definitely looking at improvements to the invasive species pages on our website for both the terrestrial invasive species and those critters and things
aquatic,
in the water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, watch for that. It's a work in progress. You've got to get together content experts as well as the IT folks, and there have actually been some changes in staff recently that should be able to start helping us move that forward further quickly. There is a great ID card that if you can, wherever your local AIS or your local DNR office is, perhaps, or I'll tell you that in a second. First of all, that card, the one side has the Eurasian, one side has the Northern.
Okay.
And that's like my favorite one to give. A lot of our cards are about the size of a small baseball card. It's a little bigger, better picture. So that's a good thing. If you want to find out who to talk to about invasive species in your county, if you search AIS, WDNR AIS contacts.
Okay.
You should end up with a link the page has a map on it, and you can click right on your county, and it'll give you both DNR staff and regional partners that you can contact for more information.
Okay, that will be useful then for people, because it's really nice to know what they look like.
Yes.
So you know what you're dealing with. Yeah, definitely. So we've got like a minute left here before we have to go. Jeannie, what are some real important points that you want to get across for people when they're thinking of, you know, they're out there enjoying our waterways? What they need to think about first?
I think it's important to know that you make a difference when you are coming and going from a water body. where we all play a part. You know, the DNR staff, obviously, there's a limited number of us, when you especially when you compare it to the thousands of people who enjoy our water, whether it's in a on a paddleboard, a kayak, or a humongous boat. So, you know, pulling those plants off, it's a little work, but it, you know, draining the water, tilting that motor to get the water out of that. It's really important to protect those waters for our enjoyment for the foreseeable future and beyond.
Definitely. Well, thank you. We've been talking with Jeannie Shear. She's an aquatic invasive species outreach specialist for the UW Extension and an aquatic invasive species monitoring specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. Up next, we'll be talking about cranes with our guest from the International Crane Foundation. So hope you can stay with us on the Ideas Network.